You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Alex Gibney has been here a number of times before to talk about his Oscar-winning documentary, Taxi to the Dark Side, also Enron, and most recently Casino Jack. He has a gift for taking topics you might think you know about and turning them on their heads. And he's done just that in his latest, Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer, which opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica. It's as fascinating as the man it's about, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Alex Gibney back to our show today. Hello.
Always a pleasure to be here, Len.
Elliot Spitzer isn't the first politician to have been brought down by a sex scandal, so what is it about him that makes this such a riveting story?
I think initially the very idea that he was the sheriff of Wall Street, a figure that was beyond reproach, so it seemed very unlike him. I think also there were other dimensions to this story that really reverberated, you know, particularly in terms of the kind of clash of titans struggle that he was in with many of the larger-than-life figures on Wall Street.
Well, he'd been projected as a possible future candidate for president. Do you think that might have been likely, or was something like this bound to happen?
I don't think it was bound to happen, but I think he was certainly likely to be a presidential candidate and likely to win. I think there was a great deal of fear actually in the Republican Party because he had a very peculiar asset, which is he was one of the few major Democratic politicians who polled higher among men than women. He was a kind of law and order liberal, a guy who could, you know, a liberal who could punch. And so that was, I think, propelling him toward the White House.
Well, I think it's almost alluded to a couple of times that this is the kind of thing that Greek drama is made of. A powerful man is brought down through hubris.
Right.
But in the Greek dramas is always also because you have the feeling they, on some level, on an unconscious level, they wanted to be brought down.
Well, there's a fatal flaw. I think there and there may have been that here. He was all too human. He wasn't the kind of perfect figure that he had advertised himself as or other people had advertised himself as. He was definitely fallible and deeply human. There was also another aspect to the story too, which is lurking in the shadows here, I think, were a number of very powerful enemies who were no doubt out to get him. And there's no doubt that he provided the weapon and the ammunition, but they were only too eager to pull the trigger.
And we'll get to that in a few moments. I've heard that when you were approached to do a film about him, you weren't sure that you wanted to do it. Why?
I wasn't sure because it just seemed like, okay, here's another scandal. What do we do here? Is there more here? But what was fascinating to me was that in the week after the scandal, everybody was talking about it, and everyone was talking about it on all sorts of levels. The issue of fidelity, infidelity, should Silda have stood with him? What about prostitution? Should it be legal? And then these larger issues about the timing of it all, because he seemed to go down just as Wall Street, the very thing he had been so famous for policing, was about to collapse.
He came on this show later to talk about the economic meltdown, and the response of some listeners came as a surprise to me. They were so judgmental, and it had nothing to do with his politics. It had all to do with the fact that this man had gone to prostitutes. Well, we've had any number of politicians who've been involved in sex scandals. Bill Clinton, David Vitter now, he's probably going to be reelected to the Senate.
Senator David Vitter is probably the best analogy because David Vitter actually ordered prostitutes while, you know, there were roll call votes in the U.S. Congress when he was a representative. He's going to be reelected. Yeah, you know, that's a funny thing, and I've reflected a lot about that in the case of Elliot Spitzer. Why does he attract so much vitriol? I mean, in part because he came off as a real crusader, but there's a real sensitivity in this country to hypocrisy. And I think that the very idea that he wasn't living up to those ideals really upset people.
He also looks uncomfortable in his own skin at times. Mm-hmm. And maybe if he just came across as a bit more likable.
Well, it's funny. I mean, you know, we give Clinton a pass, and really what he did was far more egregious. I mean, it was on the job. It was with an intern, somebody under his control. But it's funny, you know, somehow—
And it had nothing to do with his politics is the argument that people come up with. You know, one thing has nothing to do with the other, but this is another case. Did this in any way affect his Elliot Spitzer's performance as the governor of New York?
Well, I think it didn't. I mean, I think in point of fact— his ability to compartmentalize was almost freakish. And in this instance, as opposed to many of the other sex scandals, there was no crossover. He paid for the escorts with his own money, and he did it on his own time.
When you went into the project, did you have the same attitude about the story as you did after you started working on it?
Not entirely. Look, I was pretty angry too, I have to be honest. I mean, this was a guy I admired from afar because he seemed to be a one-man wrecking crew, reckoning with this whole idea of how the economic system had become fundamentally unfair. And suddenly he allowed himself to be taken out of the action. So I was angry. But, you know, you find out interesting stuff when you dig in and you start talking to people. And this story was no exception.
Well, there's already been a lot written about Spitzer. And he himself has done a fair amount of interviews, including the one I mentioned on this show, about politics, the financial quagmire we're in. Now he's hosting a show on CNN. But he had resisted speaking about himself on the dark side of this story. How early on did you try to get him to agree to be interviewed?
We tried very early on. And when I say we, this is my cohort, Peter Elkind, an editor-at-large at Fortune magazine, who wrote a book also called Client 9. And he had known Spitzer from before. And we went after him right away. For a number of months, he was under the cloud of a federal investigation. That investigation was dropped, interestingly enough, 2 days after the election in November 08. After that, we made a pretty hard press. And I think we were able to get to him at a time when nobody else was really talking to him and he wasn't talking to anybody else.
You talk about Peter Elkind as a collaborator. He was writing a book, you were doing a film, but you shared notes?
We did. We shared notes and research. I would do some things, Peter would do other things, and we'd check each other out. It ended up being very useful, both in terms of fact-checking and also pushing the reporting forward.
Did you have some questions that you wanted answers to before you began the project?
I think once I started, the project was the project. It was the story. And that was one of the mystifying things for me about this project, and actually something I really liked. It was in the telling of the story that everything became manifest. There wasn't a kind of easily articulated agenda going forward. It was like, let's find out what really happened.
Had Elliot Spitzer seen any of your previous films?
I suggested that he do. He had certainly seen the Enron film. And I'd sent him a copy of Taxi to the Dark Side. And I think he checked me out with a few other people.
Were there any limits set in advance, things that you had to agree not to ask him about?
No. The only thing, the only rule really, was that if we found out stuff that hadn't been publicly known before, we would share it with him for his comment. He had no right of editorial control, just that, and I think we probably would have done that anyway, mostly to fact check.
I'm assuming that at the beginning he was fairly guarded, and after a while, after he relaxed with you, he opened up a bit more.
I think that's fair to say, though I can't say he opened up extraordinarily about the scandal stuff. But I think you see in the film that he moved from talking in the third person or the second person to at last finally speaking in the first person pronoun.
Well, we shouldn't be surprised that he says at one point that he doesn't do introspection.
Right. I think that's fair to say, though I think in the film you see him trying to do introspection.
And
I
think trying to understand himself?
Trying to understand himself. I think, you know, the question that haunts this film is why. And in some fundamental way, it's easy to understand. As you pointed out earlier, you know, there are a lot of politicians who were unfaithful to their wives, who've had, you know, huge amorous adventures. But I think that you know, when you look at the stakes involved here and when you knew how many enemies – when he knew how many enemies were ready to take him out, it's hard to understand exactly why.
My guest is Alex Gibney, who's the writer, director, and producer of Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer, which opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and the Angelica. And you looked at this story from a number of different angles, one from the prostitution angle or
right.
The call girl angle,
mm-hmm.
and the other from the political angle. I don't know which one you want to start off talking about because you got you never really spoke to the Ashley Dupre, the woman involved, but you did get incredible interviews with a woman who you call Angelina.
Correct.
Although you don't show us her in shadow, as is usually done in this kind of film. You hired an actress, a very fine actress, it seemed to
Indeed,
me.
Indeed, Ren Schmidt is a very good actress.
To deliver the same lines that she gave you in the interviews?
That's right. I found her. And she agreed to talk on one condition, which is that I not reveal her identity. So we did two very long interviews on audio tape, and I transcribed the audio taped interviews and had an actress essentially perform those words. And I found that actually much more true to who she was, because she comes off as the kind of sympathetic character that I found her to be. Otherwise, in shadow, with a metallically altered voice, she would have come across as kind of a mobster. And she kind of countered every stereotype that you would have about the sort of stereotypical hooker.
Although the young woman who ran the escort service, who you do interview, does come across as something of a ditz.
Well, you have to remember, this is a 22-year-old who was running.
I was thrilled. She was millions of dollars were coming in.
Well, one of her lines in the film is, "I knew that cash was going to get us in trouble." Well, the FBI found $1 million in her safe. That was certainly going to be a tip-off.
Well, Elliot Spitzer was a very public figure, and I find it fascinating that no one seemed to recognize him when he started using the Emperor's Club VIP.
Well, that was a shocking thing. Really, one of the most surprising things I discovered, that none of the escorts, with the exception of Angelina, who was the only one who seemingly read the newspaper or looked at nightly news, recognized the governor of the state. I found that really shocking.
And they all believe that his name was George Fox.
George Fox. George Fox is actually the name of one of Elliot Spitzer's friends, and he used that name as his sort of his undercover name, his alias.
I wonder what the real George Fox thought.
I don't think the real George Fox was happy.
Was there anyone you wanted to talk with who you couldn't get to?
Silda. I really wanted to talk to Silda, and I reached out to her, and she declined.
Well, there's an awful lot of men with big egos here. Who are the hardest ones to deal with?
You know, ironically, at least in terms of Elliot Spitzer's enemies, they were all pretty easy to deal with. When I approached them, it was right after the scandal, and they were all eager to dance on Elliot's grave. I think Ken Langone would be one, the guy who helped to found Home Depot. Hank Greenberg.
Well, he's the former director of the New York Stock Exchange.
Indeed. And Joe Bruno, former Senate Majority Leader in New York State. And
you also had Roger Stone.
Correct. Roger Stone, a Republican operative, known as maybe the preeminent dirty trickster in the Republican Party.
He almost treats this film as his movie.
In some ways, I think
he's very proud of himself.
He is very proud of himself in the film, though he has lambasted the movie on his website, stonezone.com. You know, in part because, look, he's a hired operative paid to smear Elliot Spitzer. That's his job.
Well, one of the arguments you make here is that Elliot Spitzer just stepped on the toes of too many powerful people, and then they worked hard to get back at him. He paid a price.
He did. They outed him. I mean, it's fair to say, again, we can't emphasize enough, he did it to himself. But there were a lot of powerful people arrayed against him, and they did have a hand in the way he was outed, which I think was ultimately politically terminal.
Well, there were over 3,000 suspicious activity reports of SARS filed every day, but the FBI seemed to be able to spot Elliot Spitzer's SAR.
Yeah, we should say that, of course, the name Elliot Spitzer might have popped out, but at the same time, there are probably a lot of SARs. No, Elliot Spitzer is on the SAR.
Uh-huh.
But the fact is that there are probably a lot of SARs with famous people's names attached. The question is, how did this lead to an FBI investigation of the Emperor's Club VIP?
And then there are a lot of coincidences. Kenneth Langone, who I said was the former director of the New York Stock Exchange, also what you said, Home Depot?
Well, he helped found Home Depot.
He knew that Elliot Spitzer was on a line at the post office sending money orders to the escort service. I have no idea where Elliot Spitzer was on any day other than the time that he was on my show.
Yeah, most mysteriously, Ken Langone had a friend who happened to be directly behind Elliot Spitzer in the post office on a day when he was writing out a check for $1,800 to send to the hooker. That's what Ken Langone says on the very day that Elliot Spitzer's discovered, that he knew he was sending $1,800 to the hooker. How his friend was able to peer over and know it was going to the hooker, that remains to be seen.
Well, you also suggest that really the Bush administration Justice Department got involved in this, and they saw Elliot Spitzer as a target they wanted to go after.
Yeah, I don't want to go too far in terms of suggesting motivation, but it is clear that the investigation was extremely irregular and looks like that the investigation was conducted not to arrest Elliot Spitzer, but to expose him, to out him, because the actual prosecution is the prosecution of 22-year-old Cecile Sewell. That's who they go after. But in leaking details about it, that's how the Elliot Spitzer thing comes out.
They leaked them to the press.
They did. And actually, one of the most fantastic documents in the film is a thing called the affidavit of charges. And in that affidavit, sort of the record of wiretaps and such, there's a couple of sentences about clients 1 to 8 and client 10 and 5 riveting, lurid pages written sort of like a mystery thriller on client number 9, full of clues for people to discover.
The film portrays both sides of Elliot Spitzer, but it can be seen as something of a defense of him. Is that something that you came to during the course of working on the film?
Look, I think he's deeply human. I mean, I think one of the reasons that people were so upset at him was because they almost saw him as beyond fallibility. Well, he's deeply fallible. And I think that's an aspect of the film that comes out. You know, I think there's a lot that's deeply critical of Elliot Spitzer in this film, but I think it also looks at his role in terms of challenging some very powerful people and trying to, you know, rudder for some economic justice in this country, which very few people were trying to do as effectively as he was.
But he was no longer the Attorney General of New York State, so he couldn't go after Wall Street the way he had before. But you get the feeling that if he had continued doing what he had done as Attorney General, we might have been spared some, not all of the problems, but some of the problems that we've had over the past few years.
Well, I think even as governor of New York State, you know, he could use the bully pulpit pretty effectively. Even when he came back into the public eye after the scandal, he raised issues like why were we paying 100 cents on the dollar to Goldman Sachs through AIG and so forth that other people weren't really talking about. He was very smart about this stuff and could phrase it in ways that people could understand.
He doesn't blame other people in the film, but do you think that's just part of the PR because the way of getting himself back in an acceptable way? Or do you think he was totally honest with you?
I will never know. I think he was pretty honest. And I do think that he resigned in part because while he says he doesn't do introspection well, at some point in time when all of this came cascading down, he had to look at himself in the mirror. And suddenly realized he didn't like
it. And talk about it with his wife and people close to him.
That's right. And you can see in the interviews I do with him, the text of what he says is not all that revealing, but you can see a lot on his face in the pauses in between the answers.
There's a television series called The Good Wife, which to some degree is obviously based on what happened to Elliot Spitzer. And in this case, the character who's gone to prostitutes wants to go back into politics. Is it your sense in talking to Elliot Spitzer that he wants to get back into politics?
I don't think there's any doubt that he wants to get back into politics. I mean, I think he felt extreme anguish that he was sidelined during this economic collapse. You know, it's sort of like that was his moment. He was like Tom Brady going to the Super Bowl and then being told he has to sit out the big game. I mean, there's no doubt he wants back in. Whether he'll get there, I think, depends on whether he can convince people to trust him again.
Well, the Harvard Club of New York obviously doesn't trust him. They wouldn't allow him to become a member. do you think that he is the only applicant who has been caught going to prostitutes?
No. I would be fairly certain that he is not.
How has he reacted to seeing your film, Client 9?
He said it was fair. He said he joked that he wished the ending had been different, but that was not my problem. That was his problem.
Now, did he have to resign? Because as we said earlier, other politicians have survived personal scandals. Bill Clinton, more recently, David Vitter, and there have been lots of others. They just rode them out.
I'm not sure that he did, though I should say that one of his big problems was that his style had created so many enemies, even inside his own party, that it was going to be very hard for him to ride it out. And I also think that part of the strategy of the federal investigation was to keep federal charges hanging over his head, even though I think they knew they had no basis in fact.
And he's obviously still upset with some of the people who remained, David Patterson and Andrew Cuomo. he doesn't seem to be able to find kind things to say about either of them.
Well, I think he's much harder on Andrew Cuomo. I think he really has a hard time with Andrew Cuomo, and he's it shouldn't be a surprise. He says it pretty forcefully.
Did his wife think that he should resign? Did he tell you?
His wife urged him not to resign, and there were a number of other advisors who urged him not to resign. I think they felt he shouldn't, that he should tough it out, and there was a strategy for that. I think he thought about it for 2 or 3 days, and at the end of the day, I mean, he says in the film that he wanted to spare his family the pain of going through all that, and I think the pain he knew was going to be considerable. But I think there was also a kind of personal disappointment that he was going to have a hard time living with. He had held himself to very high standards, and he hadn't met those standards.
But a lot of people just disappear, or they go back into the law, to some law firm. He's on television now on CNN.
Right. Well,
I'm not sure that that's
America.
The ideal job for him.
I'm not sure either. I sometimes wish, simply as a viewer, an amateur viewer, that they let him off his leash a little bit more. I mean, I liked seeing Elliot Spitzer investigating people and also challenging them.
I would love to see him do the alternative to a Jim Cramer type show.
Right?
What not to invest in?
Who's a friend of his? That would it'd be great to put them back to back. Right.
Do you think that
the short seller Elliot Spitzer?
Do you think in some way he may have wanted to be caught, or thought that he was too big to be caught?
I think either of those are possible. I think though that in his character, his ability to compartmentalize is what really led him astray. The idea that he could simultaneously live these two lives and not have the one affect the other. And I think that's one of the things about Angelina in the film that is rather poignant. I mean, I think he felt that by going to see prostitutes, he could keep his sexual relations transactional in a way that wouldn't threaten the emotional bond with his wife. But I think with Angelina, he fell into a relationship.
Well, many people would argue that prostitution should be legalized, that actually what he was doing may have been harmful for his marriage, but wasn't necessarily something that people should be punished for.
I agree with that. I mean, in point of fact, you know, so long as he's not using the money of the state, so long as he's doing it with his own money and doing it on his own time, I'm not sure I see the issue, except the hypocrisy issue.
Alex Gibney is the writer, director, and producer of Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer, which opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and at the Angelica. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Lynn. Delighted.